Welcome to About You, I'm Connie Hogan. Today's show focuses on an area of our community that I don't often talk about, and it's really a challenge for so many communities, including ours. It's the area of social services for children. Orchards Children's Services was founded 60 years ago by the Detroit edition of the National Council of Jewish Women. Since then, it has expanded its focus in foster care, adoption, family preservation, education, and other very meaningful ways. My guest today is the fairly newly installed president and CEO, Nicole Lawson. And Nicole is here to tell us about her own career as well as Orchards Children's Services. Nicole, welcome.
Thanks, Connie. I'm really happy to be here.
So I always like to start out with my guests. Just talk about your background. We said you're from Michigan. I know you've worked in some companies, though, that were based in Dallas and stuff.
Yes.
So tell us a little bit about all of that.
Sure. So it's funny because I think my career has been fairly cyclical. So if I go back to my very first day in college, I've always had a love of trying to understand human behavior and a desire to help other people. And my parents really said, "Oh, but go into business. It's safe,
I heard that
right?"
Too, right?
Yes. And my very first class in college was an 8 a.m. accounting class, and I'm so proud I lasted 15 minutes before I collected my materials.
That was exactly my experience.
Yes.
But I got a degree in accounting.
So that's so funny.
You said that.
Went down to the counselor's office and just said, "I'd like to change my major to psychology, please."
That's hilarious. That is hilarious.
So, you know, locally at school at what's now known as Rochester University, but it was Rochester College at the time. I got my master's degree in counseling psychology at Siena Heights and then went into the public mental health system. And my very first job, I had just the immense privilege of creating a program to help kids and families in the child welfare system achieve permanency. So I'm not sure if you're familiar when kids go into the court system. So they actually go into foster care.
A little bit, yeah, just from stuff I've seen.
Yeah, so there's the family typically will then enter into a treatment plan to try and get to the root cause of whatever led to abuse or neglect in the first place. And then the court has to make a really, in some cases, really kind of hard decision about is it safe for this child to go back to their family of origin, or unfortunately, is it just not safe? And you know, does this child then enter into the adoption system? And so I just loved that program, and was so just devastated when the grant ran out, and decided to move into the administrative side of healthcare. Then at that time, I decided to get my PhD. So I did come back full circle to business.
Okay.
And my PhD is in business administration. And so working in the public mental health care system, and then later on into my time at Valor Healthcare, which is working and serving with veterans throughout the country in behavioral health outpatient clinics. But my husband and I eventually decided to become foster parents ourselves. And so I really got to experience that system both as a worker in the system, as an administrator over those services, and then very personally as a foster and then adoptive parent. And you know, when the opportunity came up at Orchards, it felt just
that's custom made for you.
So it was, my career felt like it was coming full circle, and it just, the convergence of my personal life and values with my career was just unbelievable. So it's been a great, great privilege and honor for me to be able to serve at Orchards.
So now you're based in Southfield, and you have people, you actually work in Southfield, or is that, how is that?
So our main office is in Southfield, but we have offices in Macomb, Genesee, and Washtenaw County as well. And then we have contracts with the state of Michigan that we actually have a presence in every county in the state. So there's a lot of, it's called post-adoption resources or PARC. And we serve families across the entire state who may have adopted, and if the family is struggling, if that child is struggling, or often just to provide supportive resources through that journey. Orchards really kind of steps in and steps up. So we have a presence throughout the entire state.
So now as I'm listening to you, even though I've read a lot of your info, I have all these questions. So like if a person locally wanted to adopt a child, would they come to you as a first step, or is that something you do after the fact?
Oh, please come to us.
Okay.
Yes, if you want to foster, if you want to adopt, if you want to be a mentor, we would absolutely love to have you. So yes, that's a very important part of what we do.
Wow. So then the children that would be adopted, because I don't know anything about this. I have several friends who adopted children from Russia and China and all that.
Yeah.
So are your children, they would be from here, is that right? Or would they be from all over?
No, typically somewhere in Michigan.
Somewhere in Michigan. So the children would be origin from Michigan.
Yes. I mean, obviously, wherever they went into the foster care system, they would have been living here at the time.
I gotcha.
But yes, a variety of ethnicities and racial backgrounds.
Oh, for sure. Diverse, I'm sure. Yeah. It's just interesting that so many people that I've known have their first step was to go into these international adoptions and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, private adoption's always a choice.
So that would be considered more private adoptions.
Yes, that would absolutely be private. And so the public system or the child welfare system here in Michigan, you could choose to foster with the potential to adopt. Which is what my husband and I did.
With the same children, you adopted the children you fostered.
I did, yes.
Okay.
But the goal is always reunification with the family of origin.
Right.
Traumatic for a child to be removed from their family of origin.
I can't imagine.
And you know, only in the most extreme cases where it's just not safe for that child to go home, does adoption then become an option. So foster parents are some of the most brave people that I know, because you welcome a child that you've never known into your home, and they're a child, and so you love them because they deserve that. And you put your heart on the line in the hopes that it breaks, because ultimately what's best for them is to be returned to their family
for sure.
of origin.
Yeah.
But so there are options if the child, the parental rights have been terminated, there are then options for children who are readily available for adoption and looking for their forever home. So that's always an option for people too.
Wow, that's so interesting. So you were really serving a much older group of people before you got into the children with the veterans.
Yes.
Do you want to talk a little bit about that? Part of your career?
Yeah, that was my time at Valor. I'm very, very proud of that. And so for veterans, men and women who have served the country and require health care for some need based on their time in the service, they are then eligible for health care through the Veterans Administration, through the VA. And the company that I was with ran, they're called Community-Based Outpatient Clinics. And they offer primary and behavioral health care to veterans, because a lot of the big VA hospitals are very city-centric, but we know our veterans live everywhere across the country. And so a lot of these clinics are located in more rural areas, designed to just be easier for them to access than to have to go to large metropolitan areas. Mm-hmm. And so I ran the behavioral health line of the business for Valor, and really got to just meet some incredible people, and you know, obviously the men and women who step up to offer their life potentially in service to their country are deserving of the best health care. So to be a part of delivering that to them, particularly in the behavioral health care space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's, you hear so many stories, it's just crazy.
Yeah, and our veteran suicide rate is higher than the average population, and being able to have a positive impact on that was really meaningful for me.
I'm sure. Now, I know a lot of your background has been in the technology arena and the digital health. Talk a little bit about how that falls into both of your, or a lot of your background, including Orchards and Valor.
So I think, you know, the best way to know we get better is to measure it.
Okay.
But behavioral health is so...
It's so hard to measure.
It is.
That's why I was wondering when you know, how does that even impact? Yeah.
But, you know, it's funny, because a long time our system, or our healthcare system, has been bifurcated in people thinking, oh, it's the quote unquote neck up or the neck down. So it's either medical or behavioral health.
I see.
But we know that they both impact one another. Mm-hmm. So for example, we know that people who are experiencing something, a more severe mental illness like bipolar disorder or schizophrenia, and they're prescribed atypical antipsychotics, will have a lot of healthcare complications up to and including a loss of life up to 20 years earlier than the general population because of those complications. And on the flip side, people who are then diagnosed with something like diabetes or they have a complex medical treatment such as cancer treatment will often develop symptoms of depression or anxiety as a result of those diagnoses. And so data really helps us to understand the impact that we're having. And that's anything from, you know, vital readings, blood pressure readings, to making sure people are even just seeing their primary care doctor once a year to check in and get that preventative care. And then measurement in terms of, we have a lot of evidence-based practices out there, and then you have assessment tools that go with that. So some really popular ones that you might even take at your own doctor, I know my primary care doctor gives it, is the Patient Health Questionnaire 9, or the PHQ-9, and it just measures depression.
Oh, it's funny, when you go now, it's like, oh my gosh, all these questions, it's funny, you know, you didn't used to have that.
Right.
It's a big, it really is, and it's like, you know, that they get into some pretty personal stuff, you know, the questions, which is great, but you just didn't have that in the past.
You didn't, and there was a stigma.
There was a stigma
around that.
And it's like, then you're looking around like, wow, what do they know? It's like, if they've been looking at, you know, different people or what they've done, I don't know.
Yeah,
it's
and
funny.
I think what things like the PHQ-9 or even the adverse childhood experiences brings out is that it's not something that only a handful of people experience. The vast majority of us are going to experience
something. That's exactly right.
And in our lifetime. And so I think it helps to destigmatize, but then it also helps us to understand in terms of our treatment and our service delivery, what's impactful and effective and what isn't.
It's amazing. Now, we've talked a lot about the adoption and the foster care for and foster services. So talk a little bit about like the family preservation and Family First, some of the programs you have for the families that are already intact.
Yes. So that's actually our largest service delivery
piece.
Oh,
it is? Yes. Oh, okay.
Because again, we know that kids do better when they stay with their family of origin.
That would make sense.
And so, you know, the state of Michigan, I think, was very forward-thinking in terms of really investing in this idea of preservation. So let's get in and help families before things get so bad that we feel the need to remove a child from their home. And so family preservation, we do have several programs, all different levels of intensity, but they're all home-based.
Okay.
So we're meeting kids and families in their home, where they're at. It's not, you know, office-based. We all act a little different than we do when we're in our home. So our social workers are going into people's homes. And so if it's Families First or family reunification, which is when kids are coming back from foster care, they go in and they really just kind of meet people where they're at. So there's no one prescribed do this, do that, parent this way, because everybody's experiences are different. And so it's really meeting with the families. They employ what's called motivational interviewing, which is to understand what matters to that family, whether it's a larger cultural or religious or ethnic experience, or if it's just something important to them as a nuclear family. And how does that then relate to them achieving stability? And certainly one of the major factors that we always factor in is a lot of the families that we serve are, you know, living paycheck to paycheck, or they're living in poverty.
Yeah.
And with the impact of inflation that we've had in this post-COVID world that we're all getting used to, it's really unfortunate sometimes, but we can really see the impact that poverty and finances also have then on a family's ability to really function and provide a really great safe space for their kids.
Now, we were talking earlier about we don't get into politics in these interviews, but this is certainly, it's related. It's related because to all of us, I mean, in terms of inflation and the way the country is. And I heard an interesting thing last night that, you know, they say the numbers of jobs and whatever are so good, but they were interviewing people in Pennsylvania. Then they're like, we're not sure we're seeing that kind of thing.
Yes, exactly.
And that's just a fact. I mean, politics aside, I mean, it is a fact that, and I can imagine with some of these families with multiple children and, you know, maybe no jobs or whatever, it's got to be incredibly hard.
Or you know, no jobs or working, having to work multiple jobs.
Multiple jobs, yes.
And then being there for your kids when they're home from school. Or if their kid is struggling in school and the school's calling to pick them up, but they don't have sick days, they can't call off,
right.
Or they don't have hybrid flexibility to work from home.
Crazy.
You know, a lot of those things are just the day-to-day life for the families
That's
that
awesome.
We serve.
Oh my gosh.
So
yeah.
Our workers are in helping them troubleshoot that and
That's
helping
wild.
Them, you know, grow an ecosystem of support for themselves and natural supports and to work through all of that mm-hmm. in a really just supportive, non-judgmental way, because mm-hmm. to have the government come in and say, you're really struggling with your kid and you know, you need some help, that can be hard. And mm-hmm. so our families are also just so incredibly open and courageous to be mm-hmm. able to accept that help,
imagine,
I think,
yeah.
as well.
Now, without sounding any kind of way, I'm sure you have a lot of diverse families, meaning cultural issues mm-hmm. from other countries where people are maybe not native-born Americans, and so there, that would adjustment would be an issue as well, I'm sure.
Yes, just in terms of, you know, general assimilation
and trusting
somebody that you don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, you know, we work really hard to have as diverse of a workforce as the community that we serve.
That would make, that would seem like it would make it a lot easier.
And you don't always hit the mark.
Oh, I'm sure. I would imagine, right. That's
but,
a good way of putting it, right?
Yeah, one thing I can say, I think about the field in general. Of course,
right.
I'm very proud of Orchards, and I think we're the best. But in the field in general is just an openness and a willingness to help. And I think people, particularly people who maybe have experienced what a lot of our families have, are very good reads of who's coming in with an agenda and who is genuinely coming in to help. And so I think that really kind of helps overcome that barrier a little bit.
Right. Now, as we're talking about some of the other issues too, do you work with law enforcement? I mean, if there are issues like in terms of violent, domestic violence and stuff in the homes and stuff.
We do. We're mandated reporters. So if we see something in the moment, we would immediately call mm-hmm. the police and want to work with law enforcement mm-hmm. that way. But as a mandated reporter, if we suspect abuse or neglect, we report up through the state.
Mm-hmm.
And so we do work closely in that regard.
Mm-hmm.
But we also, another service we provide is we run domestic violence groups.
In a
local partnership mm-hmm. that we have with Wayne County. And so we actually work with either perpetrators as well as victims to try and resolve those conflict issues, again, just to try and support the family of origin.
Mm-hmm. I know there's just so much that goes on every day in our community,
yes.
basically. And
yep.
you just see these stories and you feel, I feel isolated sometimes from, or kind of, what would you call it, in a bubble. When I see the things just on the news every day, it's like, oh my goodness. You know, there's always, like right now, there's two children missing, 13-year-olds, and they're like dragging the ponds for these kids, you
yeah.
know, and it's like, I mean, but it's every day. And it's just like you see, I think, you know, groups like you guys are just amazing when I think about it. So I know you have a lot of education resources and education programs. So talk about some of those, youth in transition and...
Yes, so sometimes when kids come into care, they might be at an age where they choose not to be adopted.
Oh,
You know, they, and...
So they're like 16 or...
15, 16, 17, but you can voluntarily stay in foster care up past the age of 18.
Okay.
So that you can still avail yourself, the state will still provide that support and some of those resources.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But our youth in transition program is really then designed to help them become young adults.
Mm-hmm.
And so we do everything from, you know, helping apply through FAFSA for federal financial aid. We have scholarship programs that our generous donor base has committed to us that we are then able to pay for college tuition so they're not graduating college with a bunch of burdensome debt.
That's awesome.
We help with housing. We help with they're called soft skills, and I really dislike that term because they're so difficult.
I know.
But interview skills and how to dress for an interview and how to be on time, getting used to making the phone calls, help with driver's training. So our youth in transition, we're really able to kind of fill that gap that perhaps the state funds can't always cover, but our youth need in order to really be successful as they move on and away from the child welfare system.
Wow. So you're speaking about the state, and now, do you have federal funding as well, or is it just pretty much Michigan, or what would be your source of funding, or the public donations?
So most of our funding is comes from the state. Now that's a mix of like federal and state funds.
Okay.
But our contracts are directly with the state of Michigan.
Okay.
And then certainly we do have a very large and generous donor base.
Okay.
That allows us to
again
fill those gaps.
Wow.
With scholarships and food and housing help.
Okay.
And things like that.
Now how about United Way? Are you on their list or?
No.
You're
I don't
okay,
know.
Okay, that's interesting. Hmm. Because they're so big in social services.
Yes.
You know, or anything like that.
Yeah, I mean, certainly we avail ourselves of the 211 hotline when we're helping families and things like
right.
that. So we're very, very well aware and appreciative of all the things that United Way does.
So we were talking earlier, you do have fundraisers coming up. So talk a lot about that.
Yes, thank you so much.
Yes.
We're thrilled for this year. We've had a change of venue and the timing couldn't be better
okay.
because we're at Ford Field.
Oh, wow.
On April 13th from 6
to 10. So that's coming
right
up. I didn't
yes.
even realize that. Okay.
Yes, just a little over a month away.
So what is it called, your fundraiser?
So it's the Gerald Levin Champions for Children.
Gerald Levin, okay.
So Gerald Levin was our first CEO when we became a 501c3 nonprofit, when the National Council for Jewish Women
right, yes.
said, you know, this is blossoming into something.
Mm-hmm.
And so our event is in his honor and for Champions for Children. And so this year we've partnered with the Detroit Academy of Arts and Sciences. And just last weekend, I was at our art day where you had teachers from the academy, students from the academy, as well as the youth that we serve at Orchards all came together to create artwork. And we're going to have VIP tours of Ford Field for our generous sponsors. And then for everyone who attends, it's strolling art exhibit. So you'll get to meet the artists. You'll
oh,
get
wow.
to see their art. They were kind enough, the kids were kind enough to fill out what their art meant to them in that moment, and how that's an expression of themselves. And then, you know, we'll have a plated dessert, and then of course raffles and a raise a paddle and all sorts of wonderful things to continue to allow us to fill those gaps and
so
do our important
now,
work.
Is this a daytime event or is it a nighttime scrolling?
It's evening, so
okay.
from 6 to 10.
It's a dinner then?
Yes.
It's a dinner, okay.
Yep.
At Ford Field. It must be big if it's at Ford Field.
Yeah, well, we're planning on it.
Oh, my gosh.
So we're hoping for a really good turnout. We're very excited. We've had one of our Lions players, Shane Zylstra, a tight end. He was injured in training camp last year,
okay,
but he's been a wonderful supporter of Orchards.
Okay. Oh, no kidding.
He designed cleats with our logo for
awesome.
Giving Tuesday. So we're very excited, hopeful he can make it, and very excited to have him there.
Wow. Okay, so is that the only one you have coming up, or do you have others you want to talk about?
That's
our
main fundraiser,
our
signature
okay.
event, yes, every
okay.
year. So we're super excited for that
okay.
one.
Okay, great. We'll keep that in mind.
Thank you.
I wanted to talk a little bit about like your leadership in the organization,
mm-hmm.
if you want to talk about like your board. And then I'm not sure, it says diversity, equity, and inclusion. Do you want to, is that a department or part of your mission?
Well, it's certainly part of our mission.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll start with the DEI.
The DEI, yeah.
Which has just long been a passion of mine. So I was afforded the opportunity through the National Council. It was for Behavioral Health.
Okay.
It is now the National Council for Well-Being.
Okay.
And they had a DEI in leadership program.
Okay.
And I was afforded the opportunity to go through that. And it's been a really deep commitment of mine since that time. And so coming into Orchards and seeing that they also have a commitment towards DEI was really exciting for me. So we're currently working with a outside firm.
Okay.
And kind of just opened up the doors to say, look at our policies, talk to people, see how we're doing in action, and then help us to develop strategies and measurable outcomes moving mm-hmm. forward so mm-hmm. that we can make sure, first and foremost, that you know who we're hiring, who we're promoting, all of those things is equitable. and diverse enough to reflect the population of people that we serve.
Okay.
But we also want to elevate all voices and make sure that people who might be coming in and working for us, or people who we might be serving that are coming from traditionally marginalized communities, have an equitable voice at the table and are treated in an equitable way.
Okay.
So DEI is very much at the forefront of all the things that we're doing right now at Orchards.
Well, I know a lot of the, well, probably not so much in the social services, but a lot of the charitables in every community, but around here, lots of times you just see the same names on the boards. Do you know what I mean? And
yes.
That would not, you know, it certainly wouldn't include a lot of those things. But from looking at your board, I looked a little bit at it. It looks like it's a great representation of our community.
It is, and that was intentional. So prior, predating me, but
predating you, right?
Yes, but our board was very intentional about wanting to have the board also reflect our community as well as the staff that we have at Orchards. Mm-hmm. So that's very close and near and dear to their heart as well.
Mm-hmm. I didn't realize before that it was founded by the National Council of Jewish Women.
Yes.
I had no idea that it was. I didn't know that much about it, but that's amazing. So some of the comments are like, they, you know, as great as they were, they didn't expand as much as you guys have.
So, I mean,
they started it.
They were
the
founders.
Timing would have been incredible.
And then there just came a time where they said, you know, we think there's a bigger place. Mm-hmm. And that was when we became the 501c3. And Gerald Levin became the first CEO.
Okay.
And it was a lot of his vision, our growth today, rooted even in his vision of then contracting with the state. Because for up until that time, it had been primarily donation supported from the community.
Wow. That's very dangerous because you just don't know.
Yes.
You know.
So that's brought a lot of stability. Mm-hmm. And so the leadership, you know, in the past 25, 30 years has really helped us get our feet under and grown into the Orchards that you would see today.
That's amazing. Okay, well, we have a few minutes left. Is there anything else you want to tell our audience about Orchards or yourself or anything generally?
Orchards, again, I just think that when we talk about the kids and the families that we serve, it's really important to recognize a lot of what happens, and I kind of alluded to traumatic experiences, and that it is traumatic.
What I would imagine.
So I would be remiss if I didn't talk about our newest area of growth, which is our True Clinic. And we provide outpatient behavioral health services, but we have some very highly trained behavioral health clinicians in evidence-based practices. One of which is it's called EMDR, and it's eye movement desensitization and reprocessing, which is why we use an acronym for it.
Oh, for sure.
But it really helps work at the brain level. Mm-hmm. To kind of merge those hemispheres of the brain so that traumatic things that happen are things that happened to you and not necessarily something that's triggering someone and happening in the moment. Mm-hmm. So I really think that Orchards, that addition really allows us to provide that full continuum of behavioral health care.
Well, Nicole, thank you for coming. It has been so educational for me, and I know for our audience, and we wish you all the best in the future.
Thank you so much, Connie. Thanks for having me.
You bet. And thanks for watching.